Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to former athlete turned actor Jay Ellis. He stopped through Atlanta this week to promote his new thriller, Escape Room. Veteran radio personality and acclaimed photographer Meredith Oakes is here to chat about her new book, Aretha, the Queen of Soul, A Life in Photographs. And closing out the show is triple threat performer Shameik Moore. The native Atlantan stopped by to discuss his history-making role in the new Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse. I'll also be playing music from jazz musicians who received Grammy Award nominations last week, including Tia Fuller, Gregory Porter, and Atlanta's own Freddie Cole. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Marinella Hume Casting is looking for new faces with amazing bodies for an upcoming series. The show is seeking male and female bodybuilders who can move well or freestyle dance. You must be available to work on December 20th, 2018 and January 8th, 2019. No large tattoos, please. If this is you, please submit your name, age, phone number, height, weight, sizes, and 3 camera ready photos to newpilotmhc@gmail.com with fit moves, the letter X, the number 2 in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, Netflix has released the first teaser trailer for their upcoming series, The Umbrella Academy, and is available for your viewing pleasure at WCLK.com. The Umbrella Academy is an adaptation of Gerard Way's comics and follows the estranged members of a dysfunctional family of superheroes as they work together to solve their father, Reginald Hargrave's, mysterious death. However, the group begins to unravel due to their divergent personalities and abilities. The Umbrella Academy will feature Grammy-winning singer and Oscar-nominated actress Mary J. Blige. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Listen to Jazz Tones on WCLK with me, Jay Edwards, on every Sunday afternoon from 3 until 7. I'll feature mainstream and contemporary jazz you won't hear anywhere else. You can hear new releases and artist interviews during our Insight on the Inside Track segment. That's Jazz Tones for your Sunday afternoon on 91.9 WCLK and streaming at WCLK.com.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man Ray Cornelius Upfront, 91.9 WCLK.
You can't contain your world forever.
I'm here for the escape room.
Try doing one thing that scares you over break.
When does the game start?
I think this is the escape room.
Look for clues.
It's getting hot in here.
It's 4:51. Got it!
Talk about immersive.
So we get this figured out, so we get out of here.
We have to trust each other.
Surviving is a choice.
Only one of us is gonna make it out.
Escape room.
You just heard the trailer for actor Jay Ellis' new film, Escape Room, the psychological thriller about six strangers who find themselves in circumstances beyond their control and must use their wits to find the clues or die. Ellis was in town earlier this week and Upfront caught up with him to discuss the project and his unpredictable character. He also talked about his insecure co-stars he'd love to do an escape room with and the iconic sports star he'd love to portray in a biopic.
Jay Ellis, welcome back to the A and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. You know, congratulations on your new film, Escape Room. You know, this is a very different kind of movie, different kind of character. So how did this project come to you?
My reps sent me the script and they were like, hey, we read this thing called Escape Room. We think you should take a look at it. And I read it and I was like, I don't know. That's not really me. And I've done escape rooms. I love escape rooms. But I wasn't 100% sure. And then I got a chance to Skype with the director. And it was for no reason other than I knew I wanted to do something different than what I had been doing, but I wasn't necessarily sure what that character was or who that person was. And I got a chance to get on the phone with the director, Adam Robitel, and we started talking through the character and the story and just the story at large. And I just fell in love with his direction for it and a lot of the comps that he had for different films. And, you know, it made me want to dive into this character, Jason.
Now, you mentioned that you've done escape rooms before. What was that experience like, and did you have fun? Did you get out of the room?
I've done a couple escape rooms. I have gotten out of every escape room. My time has gotten better with each one I've done, but it's still pretty bad. I just did one a few weeks ago with one of my castmates on this project I'm working on now. This guy, Tarzan, and the best time for that room was 33 minutes, and we got out in like 48 minutes. But, you know, my time is improving every, you know, it's improving. They give you like an hour, basically, and they kick you out because they got somebody else coming. But I've improved for sure.
What did you enjoy the most about playing this character? Like we said, he's very different from who you've played before. And he was kind of a, I don't know, we were all like, Jay, really?
You know, I like that it let me do something different. First of all, as just an actor, it was a bit of, this guy's an adrenaline junkie. He's a thrill junkie. He's a guy who, you know, he doesn't hear no. You know, he's going to compete at all times. And for me, you know, getting to play this character was getting to tap into some of that and who I am and who I've been in my own life, different stages of my life when I was more competitive or was more alpha or was more, you know, a guy who wouldn't back away from a challenge and you know, is going to compete at all costs and it doesn't matter whose life is at risk. And so I got to like tap into a little bit of that and getting to be this guy in this room of six strangers, I think was also really interesting because he's kind of the wild card. He's kind of the one that you really don't know what he's going to do. Especially when you get to see a little bit, you know, when you get to see him tested a few times and see him under some stressful moments, you actually really don't know what he's going to do. And I kind of like that.
All right. So gotta ask, this was shot entirely in South Africa, which is again, sort of out of the box mm-hmm. kind of place to shoot a film like this. What was that whole experience like?
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. I gotta say, the crews in South Africa, our production crew was absolutely amazing. They do a lot of films down there, but they were really, really great. It felt no different than working at home. Cape Town itself, obviously, is much different, and that was amazing for so many different reasons. I mean, culturally, it was enriching. Spiritually, it was enriching. You know, as a cast, we hung out. We went whale watching. We went to Table Mountain. We went to Robben Island, where Mandela was imprisoned. We went to we just got to do so many different things together, go to markets and just explore downtown Cape Town. And it was really, really special. I had an amazing time. You know, most of the time in Cape Town was shot on stage, which is why this movie was able to be shot there, because we were shooting in stages so much. But it was really, it was special. It's one of those things I'll definitely never forget, that experience.
How did you prepare for the role? Because I think you had mentioned sort of offline that you guys were on cables. There were some scenes where you guys are kind of falling. And had you ever done that before? And how did you prepare for that?
No, so a lot of that stuff was new. And thankfully, our producers and our director, they were all very, very adamant about us getting as much training and rehearsal and prep time for those things as possible. So I did Brazilian jiu-jitsu training for one fight scene in the movie, and I literally did it for 3 months. The entire time we were in production, I basically did it on my day off. I would go and spend 2 hours doing it. We did a bunch of rock climbing to get used to cable work and how to work on cables, and then we started working with our stunt team specifically on that. Shout out to our stunt team because they were also absolutely amazing. And so, yeah, that was all new stuff for me. I worked out, which is a normal thing for me, but I was working out, you know, 5-6 days a week while I was filming. So I would either work out before work or after work every single day, sometimes twice a day. Obviously eating crazy healthy, crazy, crazy, crazy healthy. When we wrapped my last scene, I actually ate 2 pizzas back to back because I was so excited to just eat something because it had been a while. But yeah, it was a lot of prep. It was a lot of physical prep, which was a lot of fun for me. I mean, I'm 6'3", 200 pounds. I'm an athlete. I played basketball my whole life. And so to get to use my physicality, I think, is something that I love and look forward to.
I'm going to put you on the spot. If you had to pick I guess maybe four of your insecure co-stars to do this type of escape room, not what you've done before, but like what you guys experienced in the movie.
In the movie?
Yeah. In the movie. Who would you pick and who do you think would die first?
In the movie, Molly's gonna die first because she has horrible, she makes bad life decisions. So Molly's probably gonna go first. Sorry, Yvonne.
Yeah.
Second, I gotta bring Chad. I think me and Chad gonna make it. Although Chad got a dark side, I think Chad might put somebody down. Chad might put Issa down for Lawrence, but then act like it was a part of the game and he had to do it. But I think Chad would make sure him and Lawrence got out. And then Kelly and Issa would probably be my other ones. And I gotta say, Kelly, I feel like, would just keep us entertained the whole time. She would die pure off accident. Like, she wouldn't even know she was about to die. It would just happen. She would just keep us laughing the whole time. And Issa, I think Chad would probably take Issa out for Lawrence. But he would just be like, yo, I had to, bro. Like, it was either us or her. Like, what was we gonna do? I feel like it would be one of those situations. But she would get far. She would get far.
What do you think is the takeaway message from Escape Room?
Interesting. I definitely think it makes you look at humanity a little bit and kind of just look at each other and just realize that, you know, we are better when we work together. I think this movie is purely about entertainment, and that's part of one of the reasons that I love it so much is like it, you know, it's an opportunity for the moviegoer, for fans, for people watching it to walk into a theater and kind of escape, no pun intended, but like kind of just escape whatever's happening outside that theater for that hour and a half. But I do think you walk away with like, we are actually better when we work together as opposed to working as individuals.
So Jay, what's next for you?
I'm currently filming Top Gun right now, doing the sequel to that for a few more months, and then you know we go back into season 4 of Insecure sooner or later.
Biopics are really huge right about now. Is there someone's life story, living or dead, that you would just love to play that lead role?
100%. Arthur Ashe. I feel like Arthur. There's a lot of people don't realize this, but he's the first black man to win Grand Slams. He was the first president of the ATP, which is now the governing body of tennis, which didn't exist at that time. He also obviously was massive in the civil rights movement and human rights movement. He was big in fighting apartheid in South Africa. Traveled all over the world, obviously. Later contracted HIV, wrote a couple books. Just a really, really amazing life. And I think a story that should definitely be told.
Are you a tennis player?
I used to play tennis. I don't play as much anymore. I got a bunch of friends that play tennis, and a friend who's a phenomenal tennis player, actually a world stage tennis player, but I don't get to play as much anymore, but I do love the game. Yeah.
Jay Ellis, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront, and much success to you in 2019.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Happy holidays, or is it? Porch pirates are busy in Atlanta neighborhoods this holiday season. A new report from the home security website Safewise.com ranked Atlanta as number 4 for homes most likely to have a package stolen during the holidays. Safewise used FBI larceny data and Google search trends for missing or stolen packages to come up with the list. We encourage you to use delivery tracking and sending your holiday purchases to the office to help keep those gifts safe. This is a public service message from WCLK.
Latrice Pace of the Anointed Pace Sisters, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My next guest is an award-winning radio personality, author, and photographer, Meredith Oakes. She has just released a new coffee table book entitled Aretha, the Queen of Soul, A Life in Photographs, which features over 85 images of Franklin throughout her legendary career. I had the pleasure of chatting with Oakes about the book and her chance encounter with the Queen. Brand new project. Congratulations on your new book, Aretha, the Queen of Soul, A Life in Photographs. So when did you become a fan of Aretha Franklin?
I was a kid, and I heard the song, The House That Jack Built. And I don't remember how old I was, but that was the first Aretha song that I heard. I know, weird, not like Respect or one of the or Think.
Yeah.
But I just love that song, and for so many reasons. So yeah, since I was a little kid, and I've been collecting records since I was about 8. So yeah, the Aretha obsession goes way back.
Yeah. And when did you know that, you know what, I really would like to compile, you know, these amazing photographs and tell this amazing story? When did this, where did the inspiration come from for this book, I should say?
Well, I wrote another book for Sterling Publishing this year called Rock and Roll Woman, and it's 50 essays on 50 very influential artists, and one of them is Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
So I had all this research, and I just thought, I mean, I was restricted to under 1,000 words per chapter for that, and I thought, this there's more here that needs to be told. So fortunately, my publisher agreed, and here we are.
Yeah. And like I was saying, you know, offline, I was able to really sit down and go through it, and it really reads like a really good book. And because you have the pictures in front of you, I mean, I could literally just visualize that beautiful home that you were talking about, and then Smokey Robinson is, you know, around the corner, and then down the street from him is Diana Ross, and then around the corner from her are the Four Tops. So, I mean, as you're reading it, you're visualizing what you're, you know, taking in, and then you've got these amazing photographs of her from the early years while she's recording, beautiful photographs with her father, Reverend Franklin, and then, of course, those intimate photos that you see of her with Smokey Robinson and you know, James Brown. And so when you were compiling this, what was that process like in pulling, like, we're going to use this photo over this photo?
Well, I wrote the story first, and then I had a photo editor, Christopher Meesum, who is wonderful, and he I don't even know how he did this, because this is hard. He found such an array of photographs that just convey all the emotion in Aretha that words can't even say. I mean, she was very reticent. She was a difficult interview, notoriously so. She didn't like to give out a lot of information about herself for many reasons, you know, that are in the book. I mean, I talk about it a bit, how she ended up being this person who was so self-contained. But I think the photos that Chris found were so evocative. I mean, you can see in her face all of these different stages of her life, everything from joy to sorrow to contemplation to ennui. Everything she felt is right there on her face, and it's such a lovely, you know, companion to the story.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of. This is the life that he planned on the love, the same old love in the house that Jack.
You know, I was reading where you were saying around that time in the early 80s, she was making, you know, another transition in her life. And you can see that on her face. How was this project different from the other books that you have worked on before?
Well, my first book was about Bruce Springsteen, so that was writing about one artist as opposed to writing about 50 artists is a different thing. You really get to delve deep into the story and the backstories and the stories that nobody knows and the stories behind the stories that everybody knows. So for me, it was a really fascinating journey to gather all of this information and read everything and listen to every. I mean, I found newsreels from the 60s and listen to her voice as a young woman who was still finding her strength and her power and becoming the Aretha who we would all know eventually. It was really fascinating.
Yeah. Did you ever have an opportunity to meet her?
I did, and she was so amazing. She was like golden. Like she was and she was funny and cool. I mean, she was just an extraordinary a person who I always felt she gave more than she got. When she would cancel shows often and people would grouse about it, and you know, if she canceled, she couldn't give you 100%. She got up there and she gave it 100% every time.
Yeah. What do you think will be the legacy of Aretha Franklin? I mean, you know, so many people say, wow, you know, it's there will never be another her, but what do you think that she has left for us besides the music? What are some other things that you think will be enduring when it comes to her?
Right, besides that extraordinary once in a generation voice that is so just it defies words too. I think that the spirituality of her, you know, she grew up in the Baptist church, but she didn't let that define her. She didn't let it restrict her. That was who she was. And she kept the tenets that were important to her, like charity and helping people and caring about people and social justice. But she, people struggle with religion and what do I believe and where, you know, what are we doing on this earth? And to have just an underlying spirituality to your life, I think, is a beautiful and very comforting dimension. You don't have to be religious. I mean, you don't have to believe in anything, but except for that there is just something larger than all of us. And I think that's comforting to a lot of people, and I think that will be, aside from the music, I think that's a lasting legacy, and I hope it's something that unites people instead of divides it, because she was really good at bringing people together.
Thank you, Meredith Oakes. Aretha, the Queen of Soul, A Life in Photographs, is available now.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is brought to you in part by Publix Supermarkets. The holiday season is upon us, and Publix wants to take the stress out of holiday entertaining. Visit Publix.com to shop online or check out their new full-service catering program. Publix is a big supporter of local community organizations focused on alleviating hunger, homelessness, supporting youth, and education. Happy holidays from Publix, where shopping is a pleasure.
You came, I was alone. I should have known you were.
Hey, y'all, what's going on? It's your boy Devon Franklin, author of the new book, The Hollywood Commandments, and you're listening to Upfront with your boy Ray Cornelius. Stay right here.
Spider-Man. I mean, this guy swings in once a day, zip, zap, zap in his little mask and answers to no one, right?
Yeah, Dad. Yeah.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I know, Dad.
You gotta say I love you back.
Dad, are you serious?
I wanna hear it.
You wanna hear me say
I love you, Dad.
You're driving me off out of school.
I love you, Dad.
Look at this place.
Dad, I love you.
Dad, I love you.
That's a copy.
You just heard the voices of Brian Tyree Henry and my last guest, Shameik Moore. The actor and singer is making history as Miles Morales, the first Black and Latino Spider-Man in the new movie Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Bitten by a radioactive spider in the subway, Brooklyn teenager Miles Morales suddenly develops mysterious powers that transforms him into the one and only Spider-Man. When he meets Peter Parker, he soon realizes that there are many others who share his special high-flying talents. The film has already received rave reviews and is nominated for Golden Globe Award for Best Animated Feature. I got a chance to chat with Moore about the project, the power of words, and manifesting your own world.
So we've got this new movie, Spider-Verse. You're making history, the first African-American Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
And Latino Spider-Man.
And Latino
Spider-Man.
Yeah, biracial.
How did this project come to you?
I attracted it via positive vibes and the laws of attraction. I was listening to I was reading the Four Agreements. I was reading The Alchemist. I was meditating, and I started writing in a journal. And I wrote, "I am Miles Morales. I am Spider-Man." And then, yeah, I was filming the movie Dope while I did that. And when we premiered the movie Dope at Sundance, Chris and Phil Lord and Chris Miller, they created this Spider-Man story that we're watching, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And yeah, they saw the movie and then they were like, "Hey, we want that guy to be Miles. We love his voice." You know, we're creating this Miles Morales story. Little did they know, I wrote it in my journal. I guess I told the universe to bring them there to check out what I'm working on at this moment in order to get me this role. And 2 years later, here we are.
Yeah, and you were a fan of
Miles Morales?
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. When I'm a fan of Spider-Man. I'm a fan of all the superheroes, to be honest. I'm like everybody else that watched the cartoons, is just like, you know, oh, wow, this is dope. Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, everybody's cool, you know? Yeah. And
did you have a favorite?
I do have favorites, but I'm going to say, because some of them are DC. There was two characters I was willing to play. It was Miles Morales from the Marvel Universe, and there was a character in the DC Universe. You know, I have my hair like this. Yeah. I'm going to just let the community, you know, go ahead and guess who I'm talking about. Yeah. But they have similar powers with the electric strike, you know, and that the power of electricity within them both is pretty interesting. But anyway, that's how I got the role, really.
What was it like last night at the premiere? You're watching this and you see little black boys in the audience, mm-hmm. cheering, wearing the Spider-Man, you know, outfit. How does that make you feel? Because this has sort of been a year for the black superhero. I mean, yeah. We kicked it off with Black Panther, and now you're ending it with Spider-Verse and you playing Spider-Man. So how did that make you feel last night?
You know, with great power comes great responsibility. I look at it and I appreciate the position I've been put in, and I think I've been put in it for a reason. I don't think it's by luck or, you know, I don't believe in coincidence. I've put in the work to be in this position, you know. I'm a true believer that the universe or God or whatever you believe in will only give you what you're able to handle, you know. And I feel like I'm, you know, hopefully I did the character justice, and it makes me feel good that there's a young black boy or a biracial boy or a white girl or a white boy that can look at Miles Morales and relate to him, you know? Yeah. And in this movie, it's not just about that. I don't want it to get caught up in, like, the fact that he's black, because if the character wasn't black, it'd still be just as great. You know, it's not even... I think the fact that he is black and Puerto Rican makes it special, because they didn't make this character, like, super, like, you know, thugged out or nothing like that. They didn't give us a stereotype in this, and I really like that. You know, this is just a good kid who happens to be black, which is reflective of real life, you know, which is why it's important and why people can relate to this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, Spider-Gwen, she's white, but it's a woman, you know, so now girls can come into the theater and not just look at Mary Jane, you know, like, oh, I want to be Mary Jane, or want to be Spider-Man but have to be like pretend to be a Spider-Woman. And I'm like, you know, now they know one, you know, Spider-Gwen, you know, yeah. It exists. Penny, she exists, you know. And then for the Peter Parker fans, you know, the OGs, you know, that love Spider-Man, he's still in there. Yeah. You know, Peter Parker's teaching Miles Morales how to be Spider-Man, you know. So Miles is just coming into a place where he's the new kid on the block. But Peter Parker is like, you know, him at 40, and like he's still Spider-Man, but he forgot what it means to be, you know, he's not having fun with it anymore. He's just over life. And Miles kind of reignites that spark in him, yeah. You know, and that's why the movie it's a great movie. Miles's family, his mother and father, you know, they're service parents, really. Like, his dad is a cop, you know, and his mom is a nurse, you know. His uncle takes him in and, like, helps him paint. You know what I mean? All that is dope. Miles is a creative soul. He's drawing, and he loves, you know, hip-hop music, and he's singing. And, you know, he's being himself when he's bitten by this spider. And then, you know, he stands up, and he takes on the challenge. He's scared a bit, but he's doing his best to...
He takes a leap.
He takes a leap. He takes a leap of faith. That's what he does. He takes a leap.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other famous voices that are on this project. Morehouse graduate Brian Tyree Henry. You've got Mahershala Ali, who is a Oscar-winning actor, just also received a Golden Globe nomination. Lily Tomlin, I mean, a comedy icon. Nicolas Cage. How much interaction did you have with these amazing stars?
Well, Brian Tyree Henry, I got to work with in studio. We did the whole, you got to say I love you. Dad, what are you? No, I love you. Nope, no. That whole scene in front of the school was in person.
Which was hilarious,
Oh, thank you, And I worked a lot with Jake Johnson from New Girl. And, yeah, we were in, I don't even remember how many scenes we did together, but we did a lot of them together. As far as those are the only two that I got to work with in studio. But I met Mahershala Ali before we booked this movie at a photo shoot in New York. And y'all know I work with Zoe Kravitz from the movie Dope. She plays Mary Jane. She's in there. And a lot of other people. I'm sorry if I'm forgetting anybody.
You're fine. What's coming up in 2019? What's
music, new? Man. Music. I have two movies dropping in 2019 as well. Great contrast with Spider-Man. I have a gangster film. I'm robbing casinos. It's pre-Hurricane Katrina, during Hurricane Katrina, and after Hurricane Katrina.
And this is with T.I. and Terrence Howard, right?
Wesley Snipes plays my pops as well. Yeah. Directed by RZA from Wu-Tang. He created Wu-Tang Clan. It's a Cat Graham plays my baby moms. It's a dope, really, really fun project to be a part of. And I'm out there robbing casinos, being a bad boy, trying to provide for my family, you know. And Wesley Snipes played my pops in this movie. I mean, 2019 looks good, bro. And then I'm just dropping music, and I'm directing the visuals, and everything would be like self-explanatory, just like this acting stuff. It's just, you know. But that's what I've always been working towards, though. And naturally, you know, is it like even with Spider-Man, like I worked hard to get here, but I wrote it in my journal. Like you asked me if I knew was it in the forefront. Yes, it was. Like you got I told the universe what I wanted. You know what I mean? Like you gotta get it. Like ain't nobody gonna give it to you. You gotta get it for yourself. You gotta tell people how to see you. You gotta walk in the room, you gotta look good, you gotta smell good, you gotta talk properly. You know what I mean? And you gotta if you want $10 million and you stepping into a room, if you want $10 million, say, hey, I want to start a business. I need to open up something that's going to change the world. You know what? I want to get kids to vote. Let's talk about this a little bit. I want to get kids to vote, right? So I say, you know what? I'm going to step in this room and I'm going to talk to all these people that can help me make it happen, right? So here's my idea. Boom. Okay, this is why it needs to happen. Boom. When you question it, this is why I have everything laid out for you, and I'm confident. I've been working out. My mind is healthy, you know, and you're feeling my energy. I'm persuasive, you know, and inspiring other people to do that is very important. So I don't even know. I just went on a little rant right there. But you know what I'm saying?
Well, Shameik Moore, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. And so excited about the film that is coming out. It'll be out this weekend, and we're really excited about it. Again, you're making history.
Thank you.
So much success for you in 2019. We look forward to the film projects, the music projects, and so much more. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Jay Ellis, Meredith Oakes, and Shameik Moore. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, December 21st, for another edition of Upfront. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK. And NPR member-supported station.